Welcome to Pyconomy. Here we cover everything from finance, economy, and how it affects you. Please welcome your host, Kyle Talks.
Thank you. What a nice guy that Kyle has introduced me like that. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Fyconomy today. If this is your first time here, welcome to the Fyconomy studio out at the Kyle Talk studio. This is the show where we talk about your finances, the economy, and everything in between and how it affects you. If this is your first time clicking here, I want yourself to give you a pat on the back. I'll take some time. Give yourself a pat on the back. If this is your millionth time here, thank you. For those of you know who you are, give ahead and give yourselves a pat on the back, because today you are choosing to care about your finances. You are choosing to learn what the heck is going on with the world and what the heck a debt ceiling is. How do you spend money? How do you invest? How do you take the money that you're earning a little and make it a lot? How do you do all these things? This is the show to come to. This is my secondary show on this podcast. My main show, and the name's going to come as a surprise, is Kyle Talks, where we talk about society, business, and culture. And we just have good conversations with people living in all those things. Spoiler alert, that's all of us. So thank you so much for tuning in today. If you're also interested in my main show, where I have interesting guests such as barbers, pro wrestlers, pro boxers, business owners, people that have lost over 500 pounds. Yes, I have interviewed all those people, two of them coming up. Yes, you can find those videos in my podcast. Go ahead and give a watch over there every Wednesday and Thursday. Wednesday or Thursday, we have episodes coming out. Just talk about society, business, culture, and how to be better, and how do we navigate in this society as a community. And that's what this podcast is all about. So if that interests you at all, please go ahead and check that out on every Wednesday and or Thursday. This is the Finance Show. We're going to focus on three main topics every week. That's what we do. What's going on in the world? What's going on in the U.S.? And how does it affect us? Does it affect us as regular people? That's you and me, regular everyday people living our lives. So today's topics, we have some good ones for you guys today. We're going to talk about the U.S. debt ceiling. The U.S. still can't figure out how to spend our money. We're going to talk about, now this one's going to be, this is going to be the most controversial article we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about meat, edible chicken, edible ground beef grown in a lab and being sold at stores. And we're going to talk about how we're all in debt. You want to know how I know that? Because everyone in the U.S. combined, we're $17 trillion in debt. We have a lot to talk about. Let's jump into the first one. What is the U.S. debt ceiling, and does it really affect us at all? Before we get started, I want to tell you a few house rules. First of all, I do have a degree in business administration and finance. I know, please stop it. Please, you don't need, please calm down. It's not that big of a deal. So I kind of know what I'm talking about. Also, with that, I also don't know what I'm talking about. I'm still young. I'm figuring out life. I'm figuring out my career still, what I want to do. I'm figuring out all these things. So this is just from my perspective, how I view these things. Being in the business world, having helped run a startup, and having being a part of a board of nonprofits, this is just some kind of information I have, but my word is not law. I always want to tell you to do your own research, and how I help you do that is I provide the links to all of these articles down in the show notes below. So please don't take my word for it. Matter of fact, don't take anybody's word for it. Take it with a little grain of salt and always do your own research, because there could be biases we don't see and just a million other things that we, as the people who are reading these articles and reacting to them, that we don't know about, but you can see it as a listener, as a viewer, and all those things. So please, I don't know everything. I'm still learning with you. That's the whole point of this podcast. I may be farther along than some, but not by much, if I'm being honest. And please read these articles. Take some time. I just cover the key points, but there's a lot of information and good contextual things in these articles that I just can't cover, or you'd be here for like 6 years doing every article. So with that in mind, let's jump into the first topic today. U.S. debt. We may possibly go under. Who would have thought the two-party system doesn't work out when it comes to economics? Now one party wants one thing, the other one doesn't want another. And it might affect us as just regular everyday people. So U.S. debt ceiling talk. What is that? Before we even jump to the article, I will break down everything in an easy to understand, because that's how I understand. I can't remember who told me this quote, but it was something that sticks with me to this day. I believe it was a YouTuber, actually, and I don't know where he got it from, and I was very young. But anyways, it said, if you can't explain something like you're a 3-year-old, then you really don't understand it. And that has stuck with me. And I strive to explain things to like a three-year-old, very basic to understand, because that shows you have a mastery. So I'm not going to use big words. The GDP growth of the retention center actually grew by 0.6%. What's the beta of the bank account? We're not going to do that. We're going to break it down because that's not how I learn. I hope maybe that's not how you learn. Hopefully it's not. Most people are like that. So what is, with that in mind, what is the debt ceiling? The debt ceiling is something we call the debt limit, and it's pretty much set by the U.S. Congress on the amount of debt the federal government can go into for a year. So, for example, let's say this is a completely example just to try to bring this point to you. Let's say in 2024, the U.S. Congress comes together, all their suits, trillions of dollars, even though they make $70,000 a year, somehow they come out almost billionaires. We're disregard that. Sit in their suits, they said, hey, how much should Uncle Sam spend this year? The U.S. Congress, they think about it with their trillions of dollars put together. Hey, Uncle Sam should only spend $1 billion this year. They slam the little the gravel on the thing. Boom. The U.S. only has $1 billion to spend that year. That is how the debt ceiling works. Of course, that was imaginary. The number's more like the trillions, like in the high trillions for how much money the U.S. can go into debt the year. But that's essentially what it is. You know, with the Webster's definition that came from ChatGPT says the debt ceiling, also known as the debt limit, is a statutory limit set by the U.S. Congress on the amount of debt the federal government can legally borrow. It represents the maximum amount of money that the government is allowed to owe to its creditors, both domestic and foreign. The debt ceiling serves a control mechanism to regulate government spending and borrowing. So, just before we jump in this article, now that we know the definition, the fact that we can't raise this, you know what? The fact of raising the debt ceiling, it means that for this year, they already set the debt limit, correct? And it's May, not even half the year, and they're already talking about raising it because we're going to get to that limit of how much we can borrow. Think about that. Isn't that a little bit crazy? 5 months in, we're almost near our budget. Maybe the government needs to worry about itself before it tells us how to manage our money. Let's jump into the article. Debt ceiling negotiations hit roadblock as talks stall and person meetings are paused. Negotiations between top debt ceiling negotiators from the White House and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy's office have hit a roadblock, leading to a pause in discussions and casting doubt on the possibility of a deal. The breakdown in talks occurred after disagreements arose during earlier discussions, derailing hopes of reaching a preliminary agreement by the weekend. By both sides, they mean Republicans and Democrats. We'll break this article down. Don't worry. Let's look it through it. Both sides expressed pessimism about the situation. I love hearing that when they're talking about finances, with Republican negotiators emphasizing the need for realistic spending cuts and addressing new revenues. The White House criticized GOP negotiators for their reluctance to compromise on budget proposals. The impasse has drawn attention internationally as President Biden discussed the issue with world leaders at G7 summit in Japan. We're going to talk about that. While the talks have temporarily paused, the urgency to raise the borrowing limit remains, with the Treasury Department warning of a potential consequence if the limit is not increased before 2024. Between June 1st, 2023. So, what does that mean? Well, simply it means the U.S. cannot decide how to manage our taxpayer money, and it actually might mean we default on the loans that we own to ourselves, to Americans, and to different foreign lenders. So, just to give you context on this situation, I have the numbers right here. The debt ceiling, so like we explained, it's a number that the Congress sets every year of how much the maximum the U.S. government can spend or borrow in a year, right? Because as I've talked about many times on Ficonomy, money is not created when it's printed. Money is created when there's a loan taking out. So for the uninitiated, what that means, when they print $7 trillion, it means nothing. Really, it means nothing. How it works is, when you go to a car, when you go to a car place that you don't have enough money for, let's say the car costs $80,000 and you take out a loan for $80,000 because you don't have $80,000 in your bank account right now, you should be thanked. You're doing America a service because you just put $80,000 into the circulation from thin air. You just created money from nothing because you didn't have it. That's the very simplistic view of it, but that's how money works. It's not created when it's printed. It's created when it's loaned, because essentially you are making something out of nothing that you had. So with that in mind, let's talk about the numbers. In 2023, the year we're currently in, by May, the debt ceiling, get ready for this, may or may not surprise you, the debt ceiling was $29.5 trillion. Okay, that's a lot of money. It definitely is. By January 19th, 19 days into the January of 2023, of this year, by 19 days into it, they had to increase the debt limit by $2.5 trillion, which leads at $31.4 trillion. Okay, yeah, cool. There's no way they spent that all, right? Like, we definitely have some wiggle room. No. January 19th, or excuse me, 20th, 2023, we met the debt ceiling cap. So 20 days into the new year, we already met our yearly spending budget. Now you can see why this is a problem. What's going on? How come we, 20 days into the new year, we're already at our debt limit? There's different things from different sides. Like I said, we mentioned politics because politics does go with economics. But over here at the Kyle Talk Studio and Phi Economy, we don't make based decisions on either side. We just look at the facts and then we go from there ourselves. Common arguments coming from both sides, starting with Republicans, is that they want to reduce spending, which makes sense to me. If we're blowing through $31 trillion in 20 days, maybe we should decide where we're spending on. Maybe we need to have some heart-to-heart conversations. Maybe talk to our boy Dave Ramsey, see what's going on. Maybe we all need to drive some, like, Hondas instead of whatever they driving. Maybe we should do some of these things. And that's mainly the argument coming from the Republicans. The Democratic side is arguing over the increase in spending on defense and the increase of spending on social programs and the increase of spending in infrastructure. Now, those things sound great, but infrastructure, really? I live in California, the most Democratic state you can get, and we have potholes everywhere. So, I mean, that sounds good. But as a California born and raised person, I ain't never seen no potholes fixed. So I don't know what infrastructure they're talking about, but we've never seen it, at least in California. And that's just to give you guys some idea of what the general conversation's like. Again, I implore you to read the article because there's a lot of good contextual things in here about the situation of the U.S. debt ceiling. Now, what happens if we don't raise the ceiling by June 1st, there's a lot of different things that can happen. It all talks about in the article. I don't want to break it all down for you. It's much better if you read it. But the big key points here is to know, one, the U.S. has never defaulted on a payment. And look it up, Google it. The U.S. has never missed a deadline payment. Doesn't mean that it can't happen on June 1st this year. It definitely could happen. But if history is on our side, then usually America figures out some way to make a payment and it goes. So I don't know what that looks like. Maybe it's not the case this time around, but 100% of the time, the U.S. has never defaulted on a payment. Two, we have a lot of political liaisons that go on behalf of the U.S. to kind of sweet talk. There's some kind of word for it, like political thing. I can't think of it at the moment, and I didn't take notes on it. But they usually send these agents out to talk about currency trade and bartering for different assets that the U.S. has in exchange for reducing the debt limit or debt owed to these certain foreign policies or foreign countries. For example, in 2018, there's a huge thing with, or 2017, I believe, one of those 2 years, Trump, we're having a trade war with China, and we actually had sent a lot of diplomats over to politically discuss how to manage the trade deficit between China and America. It was this big old thing. In a small part, that happens also during the U.S. debt ceiling crisis. You have diplomats who go and try to talk to different people about what can we trade in offer of making a payment or in lieu of making a payment. Also in the article, it talks about how President Biden went to the G7 summit, which is some big political, wow, look how cool you are party, where they talk politics, economics, what's going on, the state of their affairs. And it usually happens in Japan, I believe. I could be wrong on that. So don't quote me on that. But G7 summit is something that happens every year. And it's weird to me hearing the president going to Japan and be like, yeah, bro, we're down bad. Tell me, how do you do it? How you know, it's like going to your, I don't know, it's just weird. Going to your homie's house, I don't know, it's just weird, like, telling you all their business. They don't need to know you're in debt. They don't need to know all this stuff. So, I mean, it's politics. That's why I'm not a politician. But hopefully some good. I know Japan is an ally of the United States, so whatever can happen there. I don't know the exact numbers of debt owed to certain foreign countries from the U.S. That is something that is, you can also do research to measure. But the big points here, the U.S. debt ceiling, we have spent $31.5 trillion in the matter of 20 days into the new year. We're going to look about raising that limit. If we don't raise, the Treasury, the U.S. Treasury, also the money managers of America, said bad things will happen. Nothing else has come out of that, whatever that means. But also, if we're playing history, the U.S. has never defaulted on a payment, but that doesn't mean it can't June 1st. Now, all this talk about the U.S. debt ceiling has made me hungry, and maybe I just might like lab-grown chicken meat. And maybe you've already bought some without knowing it. Let's talk about it. Here we go. This is a big one. And this one is going to cause a lot of controversy because there's lots of talk about globalists and us eating crickets, whatever. I don't even really understand those arguments. But maybe I might understand them a little better after you and me both go over this article. Lab-grown meat approved by the FDA. Amy Chen took her first bite of chicken meat grown directly from cells in a lab. Her initial reaction was a cliche one-liner. It tasted like chicken. Chen is the operating officer at Upside Foods, a Berkeley, California-based food technology company that's been working to bring what's known as cultivated meat. Cultivated meat. I'm going to say that one more time. Cultivated meat. Does that make you uncomfortable? It makes me uncomfortable. To the American mainstream since 2015. Chen's unusual dining experience was what she calls the most remarkable and most unremarkable of her life. Could become a lot more common in the years to come. In November, the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, cleared Upside cell-cultivated chicken as safe for human consumption, marking the first time the agency has given that designation to a lab-grown meat product. The FDA green light brings Upside to a major inflection point, Chen said. Since 2015, the company has largely been a scientific endeavor. Yet, as of late, the next chapter of Upside's story is whether the credible science can turn into a functional business model. How do you guys feel about that? Eating lab-grown chicken meat. Like, if it's from the cells of a chicken and they grow it in a lab, like, I guess it's chicken, right? Like, if they are truly using chicken cells to make it. But this is interesting. This is going to affect everyone. There's already projections on how this would affect food prices and grocery prices, bringing it down significantly, the numbers in this article. So please take a look at this. But the key points here is they are going to be selling lab-grown chicken meat. On the horizon is ground beef, fish, any kind of meat. They talked about, like, also critter meat, like squirrel meat and things like that, that can be made from a lab using cells of a chicken. How does this, I don't know. I feel like I'm weird on this. Like, I'd rather have, like, a real chicken, you know, like, I want it raised, like, maybe have a good life during this process, even though that doesn't happen a lot, and then killed, and we appreciate its sacrifice, and we use it to feed ourselves. But having lab-grown, the taste would be different, right? Like, it would taste like chicken, sure. But what would be the difference? This is already having huge effects. This is very early stages of this. This isn't something that's getting generated at the utmost speed. But if this goes and they start putting this stuff on shelves, and apparently they've had some test markets in some places like Missouri, California, Louisiana, Texas, and Alaska. Alaska makes sense because that's like a hard climate to have chicken, you know what I mean? So I can see it there. But they've already done some test markets. People are saying this stuff tastes like chicken, doesn't taste like anything crazy. They said there's some textural differences, which makes sense. But here's some remarks from the board from Upsides. They said some marks and stuff they've made in an article. Upside aims to target both conflicted carnivores and vegetarians who avoid meat for environmental or animal welfare reasons, aside stating that we are using cells, but no chicken was harmed in the process of making this food, making it 100% vegetarian safe. Is lab-grown meat vegetarian safe? That's a good question. Cultivated meat also faces the challenges of getting consumers on board with eating meat made in a lab from animal cells. Upside, which is the company, plans to initially debut its chicken products in restaurants before expanding to consumer products. So much in the way like Beyond Meat and in the Impossible Patty. It, like, you know how like Starbucks and Carl's Jr. specifically. Does Taco Bell do Impossible? I don't know. But you know how like you saw them in restaurants before they were sold commercially? That's the same thing you should see here. They've already done some testing. And the cultivated meat industry needs to scale up production to compete with traditional meat in terms of volume and price. The projected price would be almost at a 42% decrease in price to produce, make, sell, transport, and put these meats in the fridge or in restaurants. So it'd be a lot more economic to do this, but does that mean should we do it? Upside in other countries and companies are working on creating new infrastructure to supply chains and supply chains for cultivated meat. Governmental funding and regulatory clearance are crucial for the cultivated meat industry to become a grocery store staple. There it is, folks. It's real. It's out there. It's a real thing. They can make chicken from chicken cells. According to them, it's vegetarian since it, I guess you didn't kill an animal to get it. You're just using their cells and you're growing it in a lab. And they're talking about how it could be like from a 30 to 42% decrease in prices for transporting the product, the logistics of it, and putting it in the fridge, putting it in a restaurant. And it reflects to lower prices in meat in general. So there's some good things that can come out of this, I guess, because it's more economic. It might be cheaper, but it's not the real thing. But is it, since it came from a chicken cell? I'm a little conflicted on this. My first hot take and hot reaction is no, because I like real chicken, even though I haven't had fake chicken. Is it fair to call it fake chicken? Even though I haven't had that stuff yet, my knee-jerk reaction is, nah, I'm good, bro. Like, I'd rather have real chicken. But who knows? How do you, would you buy this? Would you try this? Would you take part of this? Would you eat it? Would you cook it for a family? For yourself, or would you just give it to, would you even feed it to your animals? Let me know. You can contact me. Please have a reach out to my Instagram or Twitter at Kyle the Horton. And I'm really interested in your guys' response to this, because this could definitely affect society very positively or very negatively. Now, on the topic of affecting society negatively, I know you down bad. I know you in debt. I know I'm in debt. Because combined, we got $17 trillion in debt. Let's see why. You ever heard the phrase, and you do something that's just like your mom or dad, and you say, well, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree? With us talking about how the government spending is out of hand, I guess it makes sense that the U.S. American spending is out of hand, because the consumer debt reached an all-time high of $17 trillion. We are setting records, the millennial and zoomer generation. We're out here paving the way. We're following our great forefathers and Uncle Sam's by being just as much in debt as them. So let's talk about it. Total consumer debt hit a fresh new high in the first quarter of 2023, pushing past $17 trillion, even amid a sharp pullback in home borrowing. Now, this is mainly, I know I just said, thank you to the Zoomers, which are me, and Millennials, but this is actually due mainly to Boomers. Here's why. The total borrowing across all category hit $17.05 trillion, large part in due to home sales. As of late, the Generation Z and the Millennial generation have on average bought less house than the generations previous to them, as prices have pushed them out of range to own a home. With over 62% of Zoomers and Millennials renting and not owning homes, the big swing in home prices, it is due to the generations before them. An increase of $150 billion in the quarter of 2023, or 0.91% during the January to March period, the New York Federal Reserve reported Monday. That took total indebtedness up to about $2.9 trillion from the pre-COVID period. Let's talk about homes. That increase came even though new mortgage originations, including refinancing, totaled $323 billion, the lowest level since the second quarter of 2014. The total was 35% lower than the fourth quarter of 22 and 62% of the same period. That means nothing. That's just blah, blah, blah. So this is all about houses, housing debt, housing debt, housing debt. Now, there is a trend up. Zoomers and millennials are buying more houses as recently. This is relatively new. As we talked about, Zoomers and millennials don't own as much homes as the generation before us. Millennials are more coming into their home buying phases right about now. Well, I think I was like the first, I think Zoomer, Gen Z started it 1997. So I was like, I'm like one of the first Zoomers. So we're not into our home buying phase yet, but millennials are well into it. So millennials have seen a steady increase of home buying. But a lot of this comes from 30-year mortgage rates. A series of Fed rate cuts helped push 30-year mortgage rates to a low around 2.5% during 2021, which led to more mortgage applications and more people looking to buying homes since the interest rates for these loans were very low. The rates for mortgage now is around 6.5%. as the central banks has enacted 10 rate increases, totaling 5 percentage points to fight inflation, according to the central bank data. The higher rates helped push total mortgage debt to $12.04 trillion, up 0.1% from the fourth quarter. So there it is, with them raising rates. So it's a combination of things. Let me break down what this article means and what it's getting at here. So that whole last bit about rates. So Merritt have talked about in previous Ficonomy episodes where the money managers of America or the Federal Reserve, they increase interest rates so people stop spending money. Remember those conversations? So I told you to chill on your credit card, try to pay stuff with cash because it would cost you more in the long term with debt. Also, well, now we're seeing together as a group, the Ficonomy community, we're saying, those interest rates being increased is affecting homeowners so negatively, it actually increased homeowner debt by $12 trillion in the past year. The higher rates help push more from the fourth quarter. So in one quarter, from higher interest rates, we've increased debt by $12 trillion. Mind you, it's not like you're buying a new home. It's not like you're making renovations to it. It's not like you're doing anything at all crazy to it. The interest rates are just stacking up from owning the same old home you did years ago. That is the long skinny of this. Also, in addition to people trying to look for new homes, but of course that isn't really the main point here. The main point is these interest rates increases have increased debt by $12 trillion. Isn't that crazy? Maybe there's a home crisis going on. I mean, people are paying all this extra money for houses they didn't even own before just due to interest rate crisis. Do you guys own homes? Are you feeling this pain? I don't. Me and my wife aren't homeowners yet. Try to think of anyone our age that we know. We do know a couple of people that own a home. So are you feeling it? Do you have a home? Are you feeling the interest rate increase? Talk to me. Reach out to me. Let's talk about it. We talked about a lot today. What did we talk about? We talked about the U.S. debt ceiling and the U.S. not knowing how to spend our money. We talked about the reality of cultivated meat grown in a lab and being ready to be sold in restaurants and stores and shipped and flown and on boats and how that might impact the economy. We talked about the all-time trillion debt, $17 trillion in debt, most of that coming from housing, and how it affects all of us here. If you guys, please, once again, go ahead and read these articles for yourself, see what they're saying, understand them better, and take your own notes. Use what I say or what anyone else says as like a soft landing ground, taking it with a grain of salt, and then go and doing your own research. Thank you guys so much for tuning in for If Economy. If you found this educating or entertaining or just a good time, please go ahead and review the show. Review it right now. Pause the podcast, scroll down, review it. Please interact with it. Thank you so much. And then play it again after you review it. Share the podcast and tag at Kyle the Horton on Twitter or Instagram. I will repost it and love you forever. And if this is something you want to be more of, we do Five Economies every weekend. And if you're interested in great interviews, great conversations with people who are trying to make it in the world, who are just like you and me, trying to make a life out of something, check out the Kyle Talks main episode where we talk about society, business, and culture with our guest every Wednesday or Thursday. Hope you guys have a great weekend, and I hope to see you guys next week's Kyle.